Hello everybody, this is Josh Spicer from GameWisdom.com, where we examine the art and science of games. Welcome to another great episode of the Perceptive Podcast. This week, our main topic is going to be talking about the rise of the YouTuber slash Let's Play generation. For the younger fans listening to this cast, this sounds like, you know, we're just talking about your day-to-day activities. But for a lot of older gamers, especially older members of the game industry, this is a very weird and new phenomena that's really taken root over the last, I guess, like 6-7 years, maybe somewhere around that time. Things have definitely moved towards YouTube, Twitch, and really changing not only how we consume video games, but also how we market them as well. And I'm sure there's going to be a very interesting cast. It's one that I've been wanting to talk about for some time, especially since I've been expanding things on Game Wisdom here with the Twitch stream and YouTube content. But let's introduce our panel for tonight. Returning to the cast, my co-host for these casts and contributor to Game Wisdom, James Ellaby.
Hi, guys.
James, it's great to have you on. I believe this may be your first guest we're going to have who's actually considered international. Is that right?
Yep, I'm increasing my frequent flyer miles.
Yes. And our new guest for this week, he is a popular YouTuber, and he loves to talk about games as probably as much as we do. Please welcome to the cast, Stefan.
Hey guys, I wouldn't say popular. I'm like the least popular YouTuber that does this, but thanks for having me, and hello to all of the Game Wisdom listeners.
So it's great to have you on. We basically met again through Twitter, as I've been reaching out through social media, and that's actually probably part of this discussion that we'll get back to in a few minutes, was sort of the rise of social media as well. And as I always say on these casts, if you're anyone interested in talking about video games, we'd love to have you on. Be it student, enthusiast, developer, you know my email address. You can hit us up on the contact page. We can turn just about anything into a conversation on these casts. But getting back to you, Stefan, it's great to have you on. And again, we spoke through email a few times in the past, and I think you're kind of similar to me that you start out focusing more on writing and sort of getting from that way. And then as things have changed, you've also gone the YouTube video content route. Is that right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I've been a freelance writer for about a decade. Mm-hmm. I'm 30 right now, and I was like 20 or 21. I can't really remember. And I started actually writing movie reviews, which I still do. And, at 10 years ago, which again, 10 years ago, message boards and forums mm-hmm. were the thing, and specialist websites again. Granted, specialist websites are still a thing now, but back then they were the thing because, as you mentioned earlier, no real social media back then. Mm-hmm. So I actually started writing movie reviews inspired by a website called Mutant Reviewers from Hell. Mm-hmm. It was a very nice, it was like an indie-ish sort of website. And then as time went on and as I became more aware that I kind of like to write, and I would say I'm at least decent at it, I also started writing game reviews. And at a certain point, after watching people like Spoony and the Nostalgia Critic and AVGN, of course, mm-hmm. and the Cinema Snob, and that's a combination of movie and game reviewers, I thought to myself, I think I could do this. And then I started also making videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So, I still write. I still have some articles that are only in written form, but now I tend to post both of them, actually, because, you know, video spreads better, but Google really loves text. So it's good to combine the two.
Yeah. And it sounds similar to me, although I started probably later than you, like 2007, I think was when I first started writing about the video game industry. I didn't officially start Game Wisdom till about 2012. And I've been trying to get in with more freelance writing, but I definitely think you can attest to this, that the landscape for writing has certainly changed over the last decade, especially with the move to the internet, and even with the move to video content these days. It seems like it's definitely become a lot harder for writers to make their mark today than it was, again, 10 or even 15 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. The thing is now that back even 10 years ago, you could just be a writer. You could just write. Mm-hmm. And granted, word would spread a bit more difficult back then, but it would spread and people would know you as a writer. But right now, due to the ubiquitous nature of social media, you can't just be that. You also have to be active on social media. Yes. You need to build relationships. You need to build the follower base. You need to build, I don't want to say fans. I don't think I have fans. I'm not that big. I have a couple of followers who kind of like dig what I do. But you need to do that in order for you to have the slightest chance at becoming what would have been 10 years ago, a writer or a video maker or something like that. So right now it's much more about building a base of followers, mm-hmm. a base of people who will consume your content and give you feedback and give you ideas and just be there to support you.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've had to really learn the hard way with basically building this up on my own and not really having that background either in social media or in writing. Everything that I've been doing has really just been self-taught and getting advice from people who have been doing this longer than I have. It's how the YouTube channel has managed to hit 500 subscribers. It's why
Congrats, I'm still not there yet.
Thank you. And that still sounds so weird to me that that's like a milestone when I see like people like hundreds of thousands of followers too.
Yeah, that's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. And like with social media, I mean, I've been more active on Twitter in the last month than I have been in like the last 4 years.
Yeah, and haven't you felt? I mean, not necessarily felt, but haven't you seen a marked difference in how you interact and how people interact with you because of Twitter?
Yeah, and I can also say the same thing about how I've really grown through doing Game Wisdom. I've said this on this cast several times, but before doing Game Wisdom, I was pretty much 10 for 10 on the introvert scale. I couldn't talk in front of people. I couldn't stand up and have these conversations. And now I'm having daily videos, daily streams. I mean, hell, yesterday I reached out to 5 different people for podcast interviews and requests like that. You know, I've never met these people before in my life, and I'm sending them emails. 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have the self-confidence to do that.
Yeah, that is the more positive aspect of the internet and the quasi protection that is offered mm-hmm. by not actually being in the flesh.
Yeah, and I mean, even Twitter compared to other social media aspects can also be similar to that. It's very easy to click a follow button on Twitter compared to giving professional connections and information on LinkedIn, for example, or personal connections on Facebook.
Of course. Even I love using Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's much more prevalent in America than it actually is even in Western Europe. Mm-hmm. There, it's pretty used in, it's used quite a bit in the UK, but not the more Eastern you go through Europe, the less people use Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I should know because I'm originally from Romania. I live now in Denmark, so I moved from East to West. So, and I could tell this happens, but mm-hmm. I am one of the proponents of actually pushing Twitter use wherever I live. Mm-hmm. And I actually prefer to use Twitter and talk to contact indie devs or just ask them questions or get into contact with them for review keys and that sort of stuff. And that's how we met, actually. Yeah. So,
and again, like if I didn't become more aggressive in terms of using Twitter, like the last month and a half, we probably would have never gotten together like this. And it really does show sort of how the world has really changed, again, over the last 5-10 years.
Absolutely.
Now, for you, James, I think this is another interesting thing. I think you're probably more knowledgeable on like the social media and YouTuber side than I was. And I think we're about like the same age, too. So from your perspective, again, as someone who started out for console gaming and now you're sort of taking like that journey into learning more about the game industry, what's your opinion on sort of like the rise of like this social media generation?
I love it. I think it's a beautiful thing. I'm also a very much a futurist, and I believe that social media can be a wonderful tool for discussion. I think it's right now the pinnacle of free speech as it is. I mean, and keep in mind when you say free speech, you cannot talk about freedom without talking about how chaotic freedom is. So when freedom of speech, that means that, you know, old racist grandpa can tell you how mad he is about things from long ago, just as much as, you know, people like current people can talk about stuff. But that also gets a lot of young people, it gives a lot of young people a voice where before they just would not have had one. And that I think honestly believe that has helped the gaming industry just 10-20-fold. You know what I mean? It's one of those if Nintendo even farts out any news about Pokemon, it is immediately across the world, you know, in seconds, and people already are having opinions about stuff that may or may not even be officially Nintendo. You know what I mean? Which is, I think that's phenomenal. I think it's a testament to human creativity and progress socially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, James makes a great point about the fact that the internet and social media, as it is now, offers basically everyone a chance to say what it is that they want to say, whether or not you agree with it. And that was a big part of what drove me into writing, because I always felt I had something to say about movies in particular back then, and now also games. And thanks to the internet, I could say this, and my friends would read it, obviously. But that helps on a personal level, just like it helped you, Josh, to become less introverted. It also helped me become less depressed.
Yeah, and I think another good point James made is that the concept of or the use of free speech has definitely been a major factor. We said a few minutes ago when talking about Twitter that anonymity has really helped people break out of their shell, being able to reach out to more people, and we've certainly have seen the very wide gambit of content on YouTube. There are, for every, you know, hour-long critical examination piece, there's probably countless more 5-10-minute rants about any topic you can ever think of. There's probably a rant about somewhere on YouTube.
Oh, totally. Somewhere someone is raging about something you don't care.
Exactly.
About, basically.
Now, before we talk more about the YouTube side of things and its impact on the game industry, Stefan, since this is your first time on the cast, I figure before we get to that, if you could talk a little bit more about like yourself and what kind of games you like to play, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, like I said earlier, I'm 30 years old, and I've been a gamer. I've been playing games ever since I could exist, ever since I'm conscious of myself, basically. So this means considering taking my age into consideration and some other circumstances, I've actually been playing games since the Atari / Commodore 64 era. So I've much like you guys, pretty much I've been through every age more or less. I've skipped a couple of consoles now and then, but in general, I get the idea. The types of games I like to play a lot are generally RPGs, turn-based tactical things, things that have to do with strategy, resource management. I'm a huge RPG geek, a tabletop RPG person. So those are mainly my type of games. I'm not big into FPSs or walking simulators.
Yeah, and another thing we talked about through email is that, and you said this earlier, is that you do follow the Dutch indie game scene as well.
The Danish.
Danish. I'm sorry.
Yes. I do. I'm doing my best to work within the indie scene as a designer or a writer or a storyteller. And I have had some contact with a couple of indie devs. I've actually interned for one of them, and I used my video making skills basically. And this is interesting. Basically, that's what got me my internship, the fact that I have a YouTube channel and that I make videos. So that's how I got my internship. So you can remember, kids, you can always use your YouTube channel content as a portfolio. Mm-hmm. Well, and also that's kind of like a double-bladed sword because it could be negative also, but still. If you have some questions about that, I'm pretty sure I could answer a couple of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's also another thing I've noticed, that it's gotten easier to reach out to developers with the rise of the GameWisdom YouTube channel beyond just doing these podcasts and the RIM port. And we'll definitely talk more about that, I think, probably in the next 5 or so minutes. I guess my next question for you, Stefan, is then how is like the state of the Danish game industry? I've spoken to a lot of international guests, and I always like to ask them sort of how the game industry is doing in their particular neck of the woods.
I can only attest to a part of the industry here, and mostly the indie scene, and I can tell you at least in, but this is kind of this will work for the entire Scandinavian region. The countries here tend to focus quite a bit on not necessarily subsidizing, but supporting these sorts of endeavors. Mm-hmm. And there's a special university where you learn game design and everything related to it, programming, etc. And it's really easy to create a startup. It's really easy to create a very small company that you can then launch products out of. And there's a lot of support from that, from the authorities, let's call it. As far as the prevalence of them, I live in the fourth largest city in Denmark. And granted, this is a university city, but there are at least, I would think, there's at least 6 or 7 indie dev studios that I know about in town. And I've had contact with, I think, 3 of them, maybe more, direct contact, I mean.
Okay.
So there's a lot, and they tend to, and this is more related to how society works here, but they also are, they're a very close-knit group. They exchange information, they talk to each other, they help each other out a lot. So that's how things work here.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
For people listening to the cast, are there any like notable or big name Danish studios that you've had a chance to talk to or that you know of in your area?
Yeah. Not that big, but one, the studio I interned at is called Bedtime Studios. Mm-hmm. And they actually have 2 games out. One is called Back to Bed, and the other one is called Chronology. Okay. They're both puzzle platformers sort of things. And they're working on a different type of game right now, which is called, and I know this because I interned, and I follow them, which is called Figment, and it's a cross between, it's like a version of Bastion Light crossed with one of the Zelda games.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
So, that's what they're working on. But there's a bunch of other devs that actually have pretty big-ish games. They're working on pretty big games that I am not in direct contact with. Mm-hmm. There's some guys in Copenhagen who are working on a nice turn-based combat game which is called Wartile. There's a lot of them. Yeah.
Okay. Now, one question I also like to ask whenever we have international guests on, in terms of, I guess, like the platform of choice for developers, do they mainly stay on like the PC? Are they mobile, iOS, cross, or something else?
From what I've noticed, usually the problem. Now, this is okay. This might turn into a slightly bigger rant. Mm-hmm. The problem is usually devs want to create a game. They want to make games, but they don't necessarily also they don't really take into consideration. They don't think it out in the long run. Mm-hmm. For instance, if they go mobile, they might be inclined to go mobile just because they worked more on a mobile platform in college, and they're like, okay, let's continue with our end of studies project. Let's make it bigger. Whatever. Let's make this game. They don't think about the games as products necessarily. Mm-hmm. They don't introduce. They don't have. Some of them don't really have selling points proper.
Mm-hmm.
So from this aspect, the platforms they choose tend to be something that has to do a lot with what they've done in college. And this is why some of them might not be very successful from the beginning. Also, there might be poor management, some other things that I've had to deal with. Some of them like to focus on mobile a lot, mm-hmm. while some have decided just to go pure on PC first and then consoles. Yeah. And the other thing I noticed is that this choice between mobile and the other platforms tends to be related to how experienced they are as devs. Usually they will start with mobile, but then if they make a game and it doesn't work that well, or they make one or two games, then they decide to, okay, let's try it another time, and this time we go for PC, we go for Steam, we go for something like that. So usually they go for it's an evolution. It's a development from mobile to PC, and console. But some people will focus on developing only for mobile, and some others only for mm-hmm. the other platforms.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point you just said, Stefan, regarding the trouble I think a lot of indie and first-time developers have with the business side of making a video game.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's. Yeah, I have that's kind of my really grinds my gears.
Yeah,
because everyone, you know, and it's great that everyone wants to build a game, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. They're excited. They put in the work. They put in it. No one thinks about how they're gonna sell it,
mm-hmm.
What part of it is gonna sell, mm-hmm. or how. And one of the main things I tell indie devs whenever I went to interviews for the internship, or whenever I talk to them about what I can help them with online marketing, social media, community building wise, is that they need to, if their mantra is build it and they will come, they need to burn that mantra to the ground, because it does not work.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And that's something that I've been seeing doing Game Wisdom for the last 4 years, that it's one of those things you don't really think about when you're just on the consumer enthusiast side of things. But when you're reaching out to developers and you're sort of seeing the market from this side of things, you cannot basically hold up in your house or your little studio for 2 to 3 years and work on your game without speaking to the outside world, because no one's going to know about your game.
Absolutely, and this also links into what we talked earlier about the importance of first building people who know about you, building awareness, whether it's in our case, whether it's for our online presence and projects, mm-hmm. or in the case of a game dev, whether it's for their studio or their title.
Yeah.
And many of them do not think about that until it's way yes. too late in the development cycle. When there's nothing else, when there's basically nothing that I can do, and not to mention the fact that they never have budgets, they never have any sort mm-hmm. of budgets for marketing.
Yeah.
But not only do they not have budgets for marketing, they don't even consider it a thing yeah. until it's like they're like a month or two before release. And whenever I've met with a couple of them, actually, when they were like a month or two before release, and I'm like, Jesus, guys, I can do some things, but there's nothing really. I'm not a miracle worker.
Yeah.
I've actually used that several times. I'm like, sure, I can. I'm gonna do a bunch of things, but you needed to start doing this like 6 months ago.
Yes.
You know, create a dev blog, share some images, do a Twitch stream of coding or of art. There's a bunch of things that you can do. But yeah, no, they very few of them think about this, because mostly, from my experience, indie devs tend to be very programming centric. Mm-hmm. They're either all coders or they're coders and a bit of an artist. There's almost no one in there who is who's more in touch with the whole, you know, making money out of it things.
Yeah, and that is, I think, right there is like the crux of the issue there, that we've talked about this numerous times on the podcast, that there's that general belief that to be in the video game industry, you either need to be an artist or you need to be the businessman. And there are people out there who feel like those two elements are, you know, complete opposites, that you can't be both. You can only be one or the other. And we hear this a lot from especially enthusiast students and first-time devs who, again, they stay on the art side. They don't care about marketing. They may not even truly care about making money in the sense that they're willing to spend the time on it. I've been listening to like devs on Facebook and following a few people, like a lot of smaller people. And there's also this sometimes weird consensus that they hate like YouTubers. They don't want to give their game out. They just want to work on it for like 2 to 3 years and not talk to anyone. And mm-hmm. you just cannot do that. James can probably attest to this. We spoke with an indie developer, Z, who works at Serenity Forge. I think it was like 2-3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he said that I think was really smart was he's learned that you can be both. There is an art to being in the business, just as there is business to making art. And you need those two sides to really be successful.
And actually, those two sides should work together
yes.
from the get-go. And that's a thing that is kind of difficult to impart when mm-hmm. the team is already created. When I'm talking from my perspective, when I come in as an outsider to a team that is already created mm-hmm. by people who know each other for a couple of yeah. years from college, and they're all coders. And it's difficult to, nigh impossible for me to, whilst I can explain why it would be important to do this, that, and the other thing, there's this insane amount of inertia that will just like, they, even if they would want to do that, they can't really do it because they don't know how to mm-hmm. do it. Usually, and ideally, one would design the discussion is whether or not you're making a game in order to A, build experience, and you don't really care about selling it. B, you're making a particular type of statement, whether it's a personal statement or a piece of art, or C, whether you're making something that you want to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And marketing and design and gameplay mechanics all have to work together and art, obviously, mm-hmm. all have to work together in different proportions for each of this. And mostly when it comes to games that you actually want to sell, that's where marketing and everything else should be involved from almost the word go.
Yes. And again, that's something for a lot of people who aren't too familiar with the business side of things. they don't think about that. And sometimes they just don't like to do that stuff. I mean, it's sort of like the busy clerical work of making a game. Like, would you rather spend your time emailing people to play your game, or would you actually rather be designing this game? And obviously, you want to be designing the game, but as you just said, Stefan, it depends upon the goals of what you want out of this game. You need to do more than just know how to program in order to be successful in this industry. And that's one of the things that I'm definitely seeing a lot more of over the last few years. I see a lot of indie developers really have trouble sustaining themselves over 3-4+ years of being in this industry. You can make one great game, but it's very hard to turn that into a successful business.
Oh, absolutely. If you don't have anything to support that, if you don't, again, if you don't plan it as a business, or if you don't consider that this will be your main source of income, mm-hmm. then yeah, you will get into trouble, because there is a there are different ways in which you approach your even your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Because you will not want to burn yourself out after a couple of months or a year of crazy hours if you're aware in the back of your mind that you actually want to do this for maybe the next 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You will approach even your day-to-day life different. You will schedule things differently.
Yes.
But yeah, that's something that is missing with a lot. Because again, they have this idea, oh yeah, let's build a game, let's make this, and it will be awesome. But they don't do, and no one, and they don't even ask for help. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. I'm even gonna skip over the part that they can't pay, mm-hmm. but the help. But they don't even ask for help for market research, mm-hmm. target audience research, platform. You know, which type of demographic? Where are we launching? Which languages? Why? Which type? They just want to make a weird game or mm-hmm. a particular type of game, and I'm like, that's totally fine, but it won't sell because maybe you're going into a highly saturated market. Which I think the mobile market is. I think it's crazy saturated right mm-hmm. now, and very fragmented as far as gaming goes. I'm not saying it's impossible to do something, but I'm just saying it's really, 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 really hard.
Yes.
And it doesn't allow for a lot of actual personal development or learning new things
mm-hmm.
if you limit yourself to mobile. And probably people will be, oh, no, there are great... I know there's great games on mobile, but... As we've seen the how important marketing is, mm-hmm. Niantic made Ingress many years ago mm-hmm. and almost no one heard
yes.
of it. No, almost no one played it. Slap on it Pokemon and the entire planet goes nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's just the importance of marketing. Granted, that it's also brand awareness and a lot of nostalgia in mm-hmm. there, but it just goes to show how important selling points are.
Yeah, and a lot of developers don't think about that, or they're not really considering that during the development process. And I have my own little mini rant that I want to gal the next minute. But before I do that and we begin our transition to our main topic, for you, James, mm-hmm. do you have any questions for Stefan regarding sort of the Danish game industry or even what he does on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, from what he was describing about how tight-knit those communities are, it very much reminds me of, like, the artistic circles in any other medium,
mm-hmm.
Where you have the film buffs that stick together, you have the painters and writers that kind of stick together. And it's funny because a lot of people always talk about video games as art, and we always talk about video games as art to try to upsell the game
yeah.
industry and promote its legitimacy. And yet a lot of people don't realize that with how much video game is like art, you also have those negative aspects of it too. One of them being a lot of artists have no idea how to sell their art.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know either what they're worth. They either charge too much or too little. They are not business savvy. And I would say to the video game industry what I would say to somebody who makes fuzzy anime hats. I'd say, I know you love doing this, but how are you going to get paid, and who is going to be paying you? Now, as far as the Denmark circle, I'd like to know more about the community behind these short independent studios. Like, it's one thing to have an independent studio of tight-knit groups that you buddies that you went to college with. It's another thing to have a group of people that are supporting those five guys that went to school together. And I want to know, how does Denmark support its indie crowd?
Well, this is a very valid point and question. The thing is, you guys have to keep in mind that Denmark functions on a wildly different economic system than America. So, and I'm pretty sure you guys know there's been quite a few comparisons made lately on those topics, but we'll leave it at that. But the thing is, there's actually there are government programs, and there's a very small branch, but it exists. It's a small branch of the authorities of the local town hall, mayorship. There's like a separate department that actually has influence and does and organizes events and organizes the varied indie studios together. It's not just people the people who are colleagues from university. There are several generations of devs that have that make up this community. And I can tell you that in the town where I live in, which has a weird name, it's pronounced something close to Aalborg, but it's written with two A's at the start. At the end of this month, the local authorities have actually managed to organize a pretty major indie game dev focused conference. It's gonna be kind of like a convention built around and built for the devs in the northern region of Denmark.
Oh wow!
Because the town I live in is in the northern region of Denmark. So this is what supports it on a. Not only do they have support in general, but there is support from the authorities. There is, because they understand that this is an industry of the present and of the future. Mm. They understand it's important. Mm. That's why they also have a university specializing in game design and programming and whatnot. Yeah. Even I went here to a university. I just recently graduated a 2-year AP degree in multimedia design and communication in English, by the way. So it was an international class. Mm-hmm. So they did there's a lot of support from the government side. As far as the actual money, you know, people supporting them with money, I haven't actually had contact with that side, because I've worked only with I've directly worked with small-ish studios, and I've tried my best to help them, but there seems to be quite a bit of help, not really of help, but they rely a lot on the international market, not necessarily the local market. Most of the games they make are intelligently enough made in English, obviously. In Denmark, around 80% of the people will speak acceptable English, at least. So most of the games are first made in English if you want to sell them. And a lot of sales come from the UK, because there's a lot of communication and trade agreements and whatnot between the two, although not so much if Brexit happens, but again, different subject. That simple thing, the simple fact that at the end of this month there will be a convention, a conference, aimed specifically at indie devs so that they can network together and get to know each other better. That gives you an idea of how interwoven the things are here. And the comparison with the artists and the filmmakers things, it's kind of okay, it's valid, but I'd just like to add that it's not a click type of thing. It's not like, oh, yes, we are game designers and we only talk with game designers or thing like that. No, they're very open people in general. I just wanted that out there because, yeah.
Okay. And again, it's always fascinating to hear how different parts of the world are trying to build their own respective parts of the game industry up. And I think that is kind of interesting about how it's really become a lot more mainstream adopted over the last few years. You mentioned a few minutes ago regarding about going to college and having those options for game design, learning game development, that kind of thing. And again, like 10 years ago, most people still considered the game industry to be a very niche opportunity. Colleges, unless you went to like specifically a computer-oriented school or something like that, they weren't going to offer any kind of game development course. And now we've really seen, not just in the United States, but worldwide, how it's becoming more accepted as something we can appreciate and go for as our careers.
Yeah, but it's still in its infancy.
Definitely. All right. With that, again, I feel like we could easily spend 2-3 hours talking. I think I can already start to see that right now in this cast. So let's go to our main topic. And this will sort of lead me into that rant that I was talking about a few minutes ago. And this goes back to what you were talking about, Stefan, regarding trying to tell people or trying to teach indie developers and new people in the industry about the greater scope of things. And part of that would obviously be our main topic, and that is the rise of the YouTube generation. A few years ago, like 5-6 years ago, I remember always having trouble trying to figure out, like, what is a game developer? Like, how do you become successful in this industry? And one of the things that I hear from a lot of people, and as you said, Stefan, a lot of indie developers get in specifically from the programming or programming/art track. Very few of them are more on the business side. And I keep hearing from people saying, just make games. You'll be successful if you just make games. And I just don't think that's true anymore. You need to do more to be successful in this industry. As we said a few minutes ago, there's more to actually running a successful studio versus just making a game that you intend to show in your portfolio or you just want to experiment with. And a lot of that growing and trying to expand is with the YouTube side. As I said at the start of this cast, for a lot of older gamers like myself, this is all strange and new and weird to us. But for the people who've been growing up over the last 5-10 years, this is essentially, you know, your day-to-day thing. And the YouTube side of the game industry has really become a fascinating part to look at. And again, Stefan, you can attest to this as someone who started out originally doing writing, and now you're starting to transition more into video content as well. So my first question, I'm going to go around our little virtual room here, is what are your thoughts on, I guess, the quote-unquote YouTuber generation when it comes to the game industry? And we'll start with you, Stefan.
Yeah, it's an interesting fact that when we were considerably younger, we didn't have basically video game reviews on demand, more mm-hmm. or less. We had one show a week on some TV channel and maybe a couple of magazines, mm-hmm. and those tended to be enough. But the entire scope of the industry was much smaller back then, also. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because what I'm discovering is it's really difficult right now, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you know this. I've had my channel for I think 4 years, and it's really difficult for a small time. And then 4 years ago, it was still, I was kind of late to the game, to be honest, in terms of videos. And it's really difficult to actually to punch through the insane and immense amount of rather high quality, in most cases, content that is produced by the YouTubers, by the gaming YouTubers that are already huge, who already have at least 100,000 subs. But, you know, I'm talking about there is a couple of them with millions.
Yes.
And it's, I don't like to say it's impossible, but it's almost impossible to try to compete with those people on the same battleground. And that's why that's one of the reasons why I tend to focus on playing indie games and reviewing indie games or early access builds, because I think as far as I'm concerned, I'm pretty sure I will never reach any huge number of subs, but I still want to do this. It's a passion of mine to write and make videos and talk about games and movies. And if I'm going to do this, I'm going to try to hold up and shine a spotlight on indie devs who actually need it, who might not get. Yeah, if they get reviewed by a huge name, sure, they made it. But chances are, considering how many games are out there, they won't get reviewed by a huge name as is anyway. So that's my approach. But on the whole, I think it's a great way of, and now talking about the YouTube gamer and Let's Player market at large, it's actually more related to personality. Because people will tend to follow other people, not necessarily content. No matter how high quality or low quality your content is, people will tend to, if you've already got them hooked on your style or on who you are or on a particular thing, they will continue following you until you piss them off. So that's why it's kind of really difficult, because those people, those followers tend to be, they also tend to be very loyal. And we've seen that with various feuds and whatnot between all manner of YouTubers. It does have quite an effect on the game devs, but it has an effect on those game devs that get noticed. The other ones, the, let's call them the 97 point something percent of them, which I'm not sure that's an actual number, I just made it up, but considering how many games there are, I think most of them still have to do the slow and steady work. You know, yeah, you can hope you do something viral. I'm talking as far as YouTuber is concerned. But odds are you won't make something viral, and just, you know, slow and steady wins the game. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope that kind of answered your question. I just went a bit awry.
Yeah, I do want to come back to talking sort of about trying to break in. But for you, James, what do you think? Again, like, we're of similar age. Like, what are your thoughts on sort of how YouTube has really integrated itself into the game industry?
Well, something that we do got to talk about, and I'd like to, I don't even know if it's a, if you can give a real answer to this, is the question being, do like famous and top YouTubers help push industry sales, or do industry sales help push YouTubers? And by that, I mean, it's one of those, a new game comes out, and it's immediately viewed and reviewed by someone like PewDiePie. Now, PewDiePie has an astronomical amount of followers.
It's so, an obscene amount. A blasphemous amount of followers.
So, I mean, and keep in mind, that's all advertising. PewDiePie could do whatever he wants, and I'm not even talking about review itself. The second PewDiePie even says the name of a game, they got sales. That game is going to do well. Now, at the same time, you can have a you can have a the reverse happen, where instead of a game coming out that's not really that big, but PewDiePie mentions it and it becomes big, you can have the reverse, where a like, and here's the reverse would be, does a game being big, like it's one of those things, Overwatch. Overwatch was big before YouTubers started talking about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It because of the following of the company that would, you know, that's producing it. Yeah, you know I mean, it's one of those. Blizzard has spent years and years developing a fan base. You know what I mean? It's so when they say, "Oh, we're dropping a new IP," they're gonna be big now. But at the same time, you have a couple of games that are big games that when a YouTuber puts them up on his page, it attracts people because of the name of the game, which builds that YouTuber's ratings. Mm-hmm. And it almost works like a circle. You know what I mean? The better the YouTuber does, the more views the game gets. The more views the game gets, the better YouTubers do. Mm-hmm. So, and in that way, if anything, you could think of a video game marketing as going, that's been the path, the new path of video game marketing, as opposed to back in the day where Nintendo and Sega used to have their own videos. You know, I used to have commercials for you know, the Sega Saturn or like a new Sonic game. You know what I mean? And that's where you'd see these things. Now, Nintendo, all they have to do is put up a YouTube video. I don't even think they have. Do they even have Nintendo commercials? I haven't watched, honestly, cable in such a long time.
There are a few, but it's not as frequent.
Not as much as it used to be. You know, I mean, it used to be that was the only way a game company could help promote its sales. Now, they put up a YouTube video. It's immediately covered by the entire internet, which drives sales. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. Think about Pokemon Go if people didn't know what Pokemon was. Now, I mean, yeah, you could add the fact that Pokemon has a long lineage, but at the same time, it had to be popular prehence for a game like Pokemon Go to really, catch on. Mm-hmm. You know, it had to be, and that popularity came from the people that play it, the people that review it, the people that put it out, the people that can't stop talking about it. And then, you know, we'll also go to the business side, which I think takes up a good 60-70% of that, is the fact that they marketed a game like Pokemon ridiculously well. So, and so much so that it's become a pop icon around the world. So, you know, but I think YouTubers nowadays are really getting into that cycle of commercial, of advertisement for the video game industry, as much as the video game industry is helping to advertise and helping to real indirectly advertise YouTubers. So,
okay. And it's kind of interesting. I think you made a really good point there, James, about sort of the circular nature of this kind of YouTube generation, whether it starts with the YouTuber making the game more famous to give it more sales, or a famous game helping a YouTuber gain them more subs. And it has certainly become big business for a lot of YouTubers, and that has also led into more discussions about what does it mean to be a YouTuber? Like, what is your actual role when it comes to the game industry? There's been debates recently over popular YouTubers like TotalBiscuit and PewDiePie doing sponsored content without telling people. There recently, James and I spoke with Alar Sousay from Level Up Labs, and we talked about the G2A scandal that's going on and how G2A has been pretty much buying credibility by reaching out to popular YouTubers and streamers on that front. And again, this goes back to a common theme of a lot of these casts. These discussions that we're having are slowly taking shape because of the fact that the industry moves so quickly. We said a few minutes ago that this whole YouTuber thing really started about 5-6 years ago, but 10 years ago, no one really thought about doing this or thought about really turning this into a professional business. So my next question then for both of you is, when we, like, when you think about, like, the role of a YouTuber, like, what do you think? Like, when you hear these stories about, like, Total Biscuit or PewDiePie getting caught, you know, doing sponsor content without telling people, or G2A buying, you know, their advertising with famous YouTubers to try and get their own brand going. What do you think about those kinds of stories? And this time I will start with James.
Again, I think it's the conflict of art versus versus sales, mm-hmm. art versus business, where it's one of those things where the art side of me wants to look at someone like PewDiePie after something like that happens, or some of these YouTubers that are getting like public sponsors and go, man, you're selling out to the man. You're selling out to the man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I do it for the music, that kind of rage. But the business side of me and also the humanitarian side of me that goes, man, I want if PewDiePie thrives, I get more content. Mm-hmm. And that's more the rational side. It's one of those, I think a lot of YouTubers who are yelling at these people and like calling them out and being like, you sold out. I think they need to grow up. PewDiePie needs to support his family. He needs to get paid. And it can't just be from a tip the hat jar either. You know what I mean? Like, and especially if he's been popping out content. Again, if one of your friends makes amazing coats, they make beautiful coats or shoes. You know what I mean? Stop mooching off of them. Stop asking for free shoes. Start helping support their business. You know what I mean? So, I think that people, the YouTubers and the professional and the business market, I say more power to them. But what a lot of people also don't see either is that there's another side to things too. There are two popular YouTubers that I've watched. Rain Day Gaming, who does Smite videos, and I think his name is Erex. I'm probably saying his name wrong. But he does PlanetSide 2 videos. Well, I think as of this year, both of them got hired onto their prospective companies. They're YouTubers, mm-hmm. and now they're professionally working with those studios.
Okay,
they are actually working with the studios that they used to just YouTube and send videos of, which I think is phenomenal. Like that's a route all the way. I mean, it is connecting. People, it is connecting, oh, I'm a fan of this, to I'm helping make what I'm a fan of. And I mean, you could go on about the whole, dream job scenario and whatnot, but I think it's just more, it's more than that. It's connecting the community to the actual, to the business end, to the product end. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your thoughts, Stefan?
Well, you know, the thing is, this thing has always happened and will always happen whenever people have any sort of wide reach. And also if said people aren't necessarily, I don't know, preachers, but they're people who are in a business, they're a business person. So I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. I guess maybe it should have been they should have made it more clear that whatever it is that they're saying is sponsored in one way or another. But to be honest, I'm only speaking from my point of view. I am getting the product for free. I'm getting a review key of that game. So people could say that I sell out because I don't purchase the games that I review from the get-go. And so that argument doesn't really make sense. It doesn't make sense at my level, and it doesn't make a lot of sense at the crazy, insane, sacrilegious PewDiePie level either. Yeah, at a certain point, you're running a business. You need income. It's not like, I mean, I'm sure he generates enough sufficient funds, but maybe the dude wants to expand. Maybe the dude doesn't want to work for the following 45 years of his life. Doesn't matter. If it's valid, it's valid. Mm-hmm. But this is also this kind of links into the thing that people do follow you for your personality. Mm-hmm. to a large extent. I'm sure they will follow for some particular type of content, but I do think they tend to follow more for a personality. And they by seeing you, and now we're going a bit into psychology, by seeing you on a daily basis and you talking to them and occasionally telling them somewhat personal things, they get to feel like they know you. Mm-hmm. As far as they're concerned, they talk to you, or at least you talk to them on a daily basis. There you are their friend. So when their friend is keeping something away from them, that's when they get a bit annoyed. Mm-hmm. So it's not, again, yeah, James is right. That, but the thing is, reason doesn't play a role in this. It's a feelings type of thing. That's why they get that's why they're pissed about it, because their friend, quote unquote friend, wasn't completely truthful with them. So it's like, hey, I went to eat at that restaurant. It was awesome, without knowing that they just got hired by that restaurant. So I think it's kind of like that thing. And this thing will happen constantly. If I could find a sponsor or work for a studio, I'd totally do that. Just like James said, living the dream. I would love a steady source of income. Are you kidding me? Shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the cast. Even with game developers themselves, are trying to mash the two sides of wanting to create content versus wanting to create something that can sustain their livelihood. And it is kind of fascinating to look at the rise of YouTube. I mean, right now, I'm pretty sure there are people listening to this cast on YouTube when I put up the audio version on the channel. And I think you're right about that, Stefan, that it has become a lot about that cult of personality. When you see things like Angry Video Game Nerd, Nostalgia Critic, and of course some of the bigger names like Markiplier, PewDiePie, Northern Lion, stuff like that, these are people who have really built up this following. They've built up their own personal brand. And I think it goes back to, again, that's psychological aspect, that you start to connect with these people, so you want to help them succeed, you want to make it, you just want them to keep doing what you enjoy them doing, so you're willing to support them. And that means it's that for those people who have hit the big league, you know, the hundreds of thousands of subscribers, they're most likely not going to be going anywhere anytime soon unless they have some kind of major scandal. But again, it's really created this market of just like giants that you have to figure out some way to either get around, or if you can ever reach that point yourself.
Yeah, it's not impossible, man. I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been trying. Granted, when I started my channel, I started it like I think 4 years ago, or maybe even no, it's more than four. I think it's six actually. Anyway, but I started it in Romanian because I was still living in Romania back then. But for the past 2 years, I've only created English language content, and regardless of how I do or what I do, I haven't really seen any sort of. I haven't noticed any sort of trend or something that spikes, or you know, I haven't noticed that. So I'm pretty sure that this will stay for me at something of a hobby level. I am looking for work in different like I told you, in the marketing community building area of game development, mm-hmm. where, as I said, there is potential, but people also need to pay me for it. I'll still keep doing it because I consider I have a message to say. I have something to say about movies and games and things of that nature, and I'll continue saying it to those few friends who watch me and those couple of others who have somehow stumbled upon a video or an article of mine. But unless you strike it big and you make something that for some odd, unknown reason of the internet becomes viral, mm-hmm. Because yeah, it's no. The, otherwise, it's just the slow and steady. But as I've experienced it, it's really snail speed slow. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
yeah.
But I don't want to. I don't want to sound like a downer. But I'm pretty sure there's other people listening. There's a lot of people listening who are either doing this or started doing this or considered doing it. And I would like them to do it because, as you said, it does help you. At least it helps you on a very personal development level. Not to mention that if you're into it and if you do it quite a bit, you can always use them as part of your portfolio for some sort of new media related job.
Yeah, definitely a great cast so far. Now, unfortunately, with all the challenges of scheduling these casts, I'm afraid James has to be leaving us right now. So, while we'll continue talking, James, do you have any final thoughts on sort of like the state of the YouTube generation or Let's Players or stuff like that before you have to get going?
I guess my final thoughts would be I think the YouTube the whole YouTube generation and the YouTuber has really helped the gaming industry tremendously, bringing games that you might not have heard of, bringing some notoriety and talking about some hard discussions in the gaming industry, and really just again all the things you get with free speech.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wade when you wade through all of the some of the crap that's out there, there are a bunch of gems that have helped the gaming industry out and fans and just general fans. I mean, again, a game is nothing without the players to actually play the game. So
okay, cool. And like I said, we're going to keep going with this discussion. But James, it was great hanging out with you today, and we'll be sure to talk again when our next podcast when it's time for that.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice meeting you, James. Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too. Great talking to you, and great meeting you, Stefan.
All right. James, you have a great day. Well, we'll be sure not to talk too much behind your back as soon as you get off the call.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a great day, James. All right. So we will keep going on then. Now, James actually brought up a good point before he had to get off, and that is the... Oh, actually, you're still on the call, right, Stefan?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
just want to make sure. Okay, 3, 2, 1. And James brought up a really good point about YouTubers being able to show off these games. And this goes back to that circular nature we mentioned a few minutes ago on the cast. And that takes me to another interesting point and a debate that we've been hearing more about. And that's the idea of YouTubers essentially offering their services or offering their marketing to indie developers. I've been perusing some forums, listening to people talk, and there's been cases of developers essentially, I guess, having to negotiate or even like holding their game hostage, like, you know, begging and pleading to popular YouTubers to, you know, try my game. We need the subs or we need the views. And about these YouTubers essentially charging for their time. It's, again, another one of those very sticky situations, given the rate that the YouTube scene has really grown over the last 5 years. So, for you, Stefan, what are your thoughts on that, I guess, sort of like, I guess, privatizing your YouTube channel, in a sense?
Well, if it works, it works. But, again, it and this also is linked to what we talked earlier. It kind of depends what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you want to earn from your YouTube channel, then maybe, yeah, maybe you should do your best to focus on, I don't know, on popular games, on new games, on AAA games, invest a bit of money in your production, you know, But I think this is something that just like the sponsored videos of the larger YouTubers, mm-hmm. I think this is something inherent in the economical model. There's no way that this will happen. Influencers will always be at least propositioned to use their influence for money. Mm-hmm. That's something that that's how it works. That's how a big part of media actually works. Because even in the time of newspapers, which, by the way, talking about YouTubers, newspapers, remember those? Yeah. you sold and still sell advertisement space. You're basically using your reach, your power to influence, and lending it to others in exchange for cash. That's just how it works. Now, to the considerably shadier aspects that you were talking about, unfortunately, those are also inherent in human nature. Mm-hmm. And they will find themselves and worm themselves into pretty much any type of human endeavor. The best we can do is to have maybe a set of principles, or personally, I'm talking as a YouTuber, that you will not break. Some people obviously won't. Some people will be more interested in making money or not making money or whatever, or reviewing only particular types of things, or maybe only making negative reviews. You never know. So I think it's just an inherent part of the business, of the industry. It will be there. It's not like it's only to be found in terms of the YouTuber market. It's been a thing since pretty much ever. Mm-hmm. So it's not going away anytime soon. There's no real way to regulate it if that were possible, because and this is more connected to what James said, in the internet is still pretty much the wild, wild west in terms of those sorts of any sorts of limitation, basically, at least at the moment. Although, rest assured, many governments around the world are doing their best and their damnest to the wild, wild west it. But I think that's going to be one of the more important problems, more important issues that we will have to face in the very near future. But I think that's a discussion for a different podcast.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I agree with yourself on that. This is not going away anytime soon. We're not going to wake up one day this year and hear, there's no more YouTubers, there's no more Let's Play. This has certainly become an integrated part of the game industry, and not just the game industry, but again, as a form of marketing, as a very potential and lucrative option to get your product out there. And with my own channel, I've been sort of wrestling with that idea myself. If I want to start doing that kind of sponsored content, I want to start offering my services in that way for for money beyond just getting the press key for a game. And it is a very tricky element to wade through. One of the things about Game Wisdom is that I'm sort of positioned in a unique area compared to a lot of other YouTubers, is the fact that I'm sort of the middleman between a designer and the consumer. It's one of the reasons why we've been able to have so many developers on the Perceptive podcast, is the fact that I'm not just approaching this as an enthusiast, I'm not just approaching this as a journalist, but as someone interested in the examination of design and the industry. And it's what has really led to the popularity of these casts. So, like, I can't do like a lot of YouTubers who just make like rant videos, yelling about a certain game, because I have to keep, or I do have that professional rapport with a lot of developers. And again, this really is an interesting discussion. I think, as we've been saying, a lot of this has been the quote-unquote Wild West. And we can even say that about just the indie market as well. A lot of this is pretty much everyone has their own set of rules. There's no standardization. And I think it will be very fascinating to see over the next, I'm going to say like 4 or 5 years, what will, I guess, entail with trying to rein in a lot of this, again, this do as you please kind of atmosphere.
There has always been, I think in terms of this more, not necessarily global, but wide reaching type of, control or regulation, I think this will depend much it will depend the least on what the actual game industry is doing, and it will depend much more on things that are way above our pay grade.
Yes.
And I'm talking about geopolitics here. I'm talking about massive financial interests and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the thing is that they'll usually use some sort of a scandal in the gaming industry to then try to worm in some weird regulations. And it's not like I'm a conspiracy nut. This happened a couple of decades ago with the explicit lyrics thingy with hip hop.
Yeah.
So there are examples that happened. There are precursors to this. But I do think that actually, thanks to the internet and thanks to how it functions now, we as general users, I'm not even talking about necessarily YouTubers, have much more potential to be aware and have much more power into actually at least trying more than previous generations could to influence what actually does happen in terms of wide-spanning, wider-ranging regulations and things like that sort. I don't really think so, unless something majorly catastrophic happens at a socio-political, geopolitical level. I don't think we'll see any sort of wide-ranging regulation within YouTube or within the YouTuber market in general. This is an interesting thing. We do have to keep in mind that we are actually using something that isn't necessarily, it isn't state run. It's a private endeavor. It is owned by a private entity, and that private entity has pretty much every and any sort of right to dictate what you can and cannot do with its platform. So as far as those regulations go, we are subject to those even now. And I'm pretty sure you know this, those copyright claims for music and video are excruciatingly annoying.
Yes.
I've had them on, can you believe it? I've had them on 2 videos on 2 early access builds. And thankfully, the devs were really nice and I got into contact with them and they had no idea this happened. Because, again, they actually paid, they bought the music, or the music was specifically created for the game. But I still got a copyright claim for it, for whoever knows what reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in terms of that, we're still very subject to it. And what I see as more of a problem and what I hope to see in the following years is actually maybe there's a chance that some alternatives pop up besides YouTube.
Yeah.
It seems kind of difficult. It seems kind of really, really hard to even fathom at this point. But stranger things have happened, and I would really like to see some alternatives. I don't know right now what they could look like. I haven't thought about designing an alternative, to be honest, because it's just not my realm. But I remember a time when it wasn't just YouTube. YouTube still was the major thing, but there was also another platform called Blip. And on Blip, you could upload your videos without the fear of copyright robots claiming your reviews of movies and things. So, but Blip disappeared. So, I would like to see if that happens in the following years. And allow me to just go a little bit longer on what I think will happen in the near future with the indie scene, especially, is that I've been seeing a bit of some people are trying to create platforms where they can connect reviewers with indie devs, so that review keys can be exchanged in a very safe manner, so that what you talked about earlier doesn't happen, and also that people don't sell those keys or don't ask for more keys and then sell them to people like G2A and stuff like that. So I know actually of two platforms who are trying to do that, but I do think they have quite the hill to climb because of the earlier aspects we talked about, and that how devs don't really think of social media or marketing or, you know, things of that sort. So that's kind of my view of the near future.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. I think also, as you said, it goes back to what we're saying with trying to break into the YouTube scene itself. It's very hard to establish yourself when there's already a foundation in place. And it's going to be interesting to see if anyone's going to be able to take things away from Twitch or from YouTube in the near future. Again, you have a fully established fan base, and it's very hard to get them to look at something new. It even goes back to what we talked about with the independent developer scene, with developers who don't want to do marketing. You're not going to get people who've never heard of your game before to try it out unless there's some kind of word of mouth going. Now, for like people like us and for the enthusiasts who actively look for these games, yes, we're going to look at your stuff, but that is just a fraction compared to the hundreds of thousands or even perhaps millions of people who wouldn't know about your game if they didn't see it on a popular YouTuber or didn't know about through Twitch or any other form of PR or social media.
Absolutely. And I think actually I think our only and this is going to sound very European of me, but I think our only chance, the small YouTuber chance, is just if we bunch up together and help each other a lot. I don't see this as a lone gunman sort of thing. I see this more as a Dirty Dozen sort of thing. The chances of us doing it on our own are quite small, but if more smaller YouTubers or, you know, bloggers, that sort of thing, get together and support each other and, you know, guest feature each other on our podcasts or videos or articles or websites, I think that's our shot. That's our best shot at actually getting bigger and reaching more people, because I'm pretty sure we have basically zero followers in common. So this will help both of us. Yeah. This podcast will hopefully help both of us. But I think this is what there should be more. And this is me living in Denmark for a couple of years, we should do our best to create a sort of a community and help each other out and promote each other's work and do crossovers.
Yeah.
Do some cross promotion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I agree with you. And that's one of the things I think has also really, I've been trying to do with Game Wisdom with the developer side, is to have these discussions with developers and again, try to help them out, try to build that network up. One of the most popular features we had was Developer Roundtable Cast, when I got a bunch of developers on to talk about their games, talk about topics that interest them, and it's a conversation you never really hear about. And it's one of the things I'm trying to get back with the Patreon that I have up for the site, because it is a lot of work. And I think you make a really good point, Stefan, about everyone trying to build that network up and trying to essentially grow that way, because five voices is going to be louder than one, obviously.
Yep, that's the whole Dirty Dozen idea. But it's always going to be hard, because some people see themselves as the lone wolf, and it's you can't really reason or argue with them. But
okay. Yeah, definitely. This has been a great cast. Unfortunately, James did have to get going. It's one of the challenges of doing these casts. And I can definitely tell, I said this earlier, but one of the things I've gotten really good at is knowing when we will start to run long. Like, you can tell when there's a good energy on the cast, a good rapport between everyone on there. And as we were saying a few minutes ago, I think we could easily just sit here and talk for the next 2.5-3 hours like it's nothing.
Yep.
But I know for those of you listening to this, whether it's on the site, on Google Play or iTunes, and even for the YouTube crowd, who I guess we've been talking about you for the last 40 minutes, I know the cast is definitely getting a little bit long, so we're going to wrap things up in the next few minutes. So, to start, I guess, ending this cast, Stefan, in yep. terms of this topic that we've been talking about with YouTubers, Let's Play, and sort of this synergy between them and the game industry, are there any topics or issues or anything that you would like to bring up that we haven't talked about yet?
I would like to, and this is just from my personal perspective, I'd just like to encourage, if there are indie devs or aspiring indie devs out there listening, mm-hmm. To encourage them to reach out to people like myself and you mm-hmm. and others, obviously. Maybe try to check out their YouTube channel and see if what they do meshes with your game or your philosophy. For instance, I tend to review a lot of RPGs and adventure games. I have, and this is just how I found some a really peculiar and funny adventure game. And I have actually declared it the featured adventure game of my channel because I started and it was really fun to play on a live stream. So this is what I would like to end on, as despite how much of a downer I may have been earlier, mm-hmm. End on a positive note and suggest that they try to reach out a bit and maybe ask for help or ask for some advice or simply contact some YouTuber they like, maybe they like, and say, hey, we're working on something, would you be willing to play it, or something of that sort, something personal, not a mass email, mm-hmm. guys, something personal, because we, at least I appreciate that. And usually, honestly, I am the one usually starting those discussions. But if that is the case, if I do ask you for something or someone like me asks you, be in full on, not necessarily customer support mode, customer service mode, but keep in mind that some of us, especially the older us, we have a lot of experience both playing the games. Some of us have some experience making the games. Some of us design games, even though they're not published yet. And we can actually be a great source of very knowledgeable feedback. And that's something that I try to do with all of the developers that give me review keys, besides either making a live stream or an actual review video. I do my best to offer them some type of feedback mm-hmm. related to their game, to their presentation, to general design or idea. And there hasn't been one game that I couldn't offer some amount of feedback back mm-hmm. to. So keep this in mind as well. We are also a good source of very knowledgeable feedback for your game or your business, in my case, because I'm always marketing minded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. I don't stuff on again. We've talked about this not just on this cast, but in our podcast on indie marketing and PR, that you cannot just stay closed off for 2 to 3 years and work on a game. You have to start sowing those seeds of PR for your title. We spoke many times about Darkest Dungeon, how they had pretty much for like the entire year before the Kickstarter, they were trying to raise awareness. And as you said earlier in the cast, Stefan, about building that fan base. And you can't do that just staying, you know, talking to yourself for 8 hours a day.
And absolutely not.
If you can't do it or you don't want to do it, then you need to get someone who can do that stuff. And what you were just saying about reaching out to YouTubers, that is a very great point. As I said, I've read forums, and I've seen people say, you know, how much they hate YouTubers. They don't trust them. They don't want to give their game out to people. You can't do that in this world unless you are the master marketer. And, you know, you can do it all yourself kind of thing. But I think, Seven, you can definitely attest to this. A lot of the developers aren't in that field.
Oh, no, we talked about that. No, they're not.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, for instance, and this is something I do as a YouTuber, whenever I contact a developer or something like that, I will not hesitate to use a reference. Mm-hmm. Just like whenever searching for a job, I will tell them these people can attest to my whatever, either my skills or my feedback or things like that. And everyone, people will love to be. Would like to be included in that discussion, and that's another way that you can network by mm-hmm. by me asking or tweeting to a developer a key request or telling them that I'll live stream, and then tagging a different developer telling them that this developer can back me up or can attest to my skills. That way I just kind of prepared the foundation for those two devs to network with each other. It's even those types of that type of a small thing that we can do, and anyone basically can do, but it takes some time to get into it so that it becomes more or less a reflex.
Yeah. And I think for me, I think having the YouTube channel has also helped with my credibility as a secondary source of content. Now I can also say not only will I write about your game, I'll also make a video about it. And as we've seen with the YouTube, it's just that positive feedback loop. The more content, more subs I get, the easier it'll be to get more people to check it out, which means more games, which means more subs, and, you know, just repeat this ad nauseum.
Hopefully yeah. It works.
I know.
we can only hope it works.
Yeah.
If that doesn't work, you still have your own relationship with that dev.
Yes.
Which you should actively try to cultivate and offer feedback and mm-hmm. ask them to or ask for or sign up for their newsletter. Make sure you
get press lists,
maybe
stuff like that.
Yeah, you maybe do an update on a video if a huge game update happens. Mm-hmm. I plan to do that with a lot of the early access games that I've played. Mm-hmm. Whenever the devs will bring in like a new feature into the game or make a huge update, I plan to revisit it because I consider it part of my job. My job doesn't end with mm-hmm. one video or one review, especially if it's an early access and the game changes.
Yeah, and that's what I did with Clockwork Empire. So I just posted. For those of you listening to this cast, I just posted my impressions of Alpha 53 of the game that completely changed a lot of the basic systems. And it is a never-ending process. I think that's a really good point, Stefan, about keeping in touch with developers. I mean, especially for someone like me, who also does podcasts and written interviews, it's always important to have, you know, your contacts book growing with every new developer you meet.
Yep, networking.
Definitely.
Networking is where it's at.
Definitely. All right. And again, I think we could, there's so many different topics we could segue on, but I think it's definitely time to wrap things up. So
yeah, I think most of the listeners are asleep already.
Yep, definitely. depending upon what platform you're listening on as well, I'm curious to see if anyone on YouTube actually listens throughout this whole cast. So
you can check that in the analytics.
Yeah. All right. So, to wrap up the cast then, Stefan, do you have, I know we've probably had several final thoughts, do you have any final things you would like to add or say about any one of the topics we've mentioned?
No, not necessarily. I think we did our best. We covered as much ground as possible. I'd just like to thank you for inviting me and having this awesome discussion and meeting both you and James. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully we can do this sometime in the future on a different subject matter, although we could still continue on this one.
Definitely.
And, It would be curious. I'll be following the feedback on this article, on this podcast, and see what the listeners say, and you know, things like that.
Great. All right. And again, Seven, it was definitely a pleasure hanging out with you. And again, it is fascinating to see how we're having these conversations thanks to social media. Again, if I didn't do more Twitter, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today. But I don't want to bring that up again because we'll be here for another 40 minutes.
Yeah, no, just so you know, I know of Game Wisdom because of Twitter.
Yep.
Just so it's clear. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And like you said, I would love to hang out with you again. Again, we can easily talk about any other topic. So if you have any more free time in the future or anything else you'd like to discuss, definitely feel free to send me an email.
We will definitely keep in touch, awesome. Both maybe email, but most likely Twitter.
Awesome. All right. So with all that said, we're going to end things here for this week's edition of the cast. Thanks so much for listening. If you would like to support Game Wisdom, we have multiple ways to do that. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, I said this at the start of this cast, but we're always looking for new people. You can email me at josh@game-wisdom.com or by following the contact link on the front page. If you're watching this on YouTube or any other avenue, feel free to send me a message there. If you would like to follow me, you can find me on Twitch and Twitter under GW Bicer for the latest updates of new content as well as thoughts for me throughout the day. Obviously, at this point, you know that I'm on YouTube and Twitch. There are links on the front page, and you can find me on there under Game Wisdom for a wide variety of video content, Let's Plays, game examinations, and more. Last but not least, if you'd like to support the Game Wisdom Patreon campaign, in order to get the monthly funding we need to keep going, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom or by clicking the Patreon banner on the front page. Your donations can help to keep Game Wisdom supported and going, and we can hit some of those goals. It will mean more content for everyone to enjoy, not just writing, but podcasts, videos, etc. As I've said, we're now instituting for $15 or more pledges, you'll get a special podcast shout-out. So I'd like to thank Danny Ramdis for their continued contribution. And for $20 or more, you can get a digital CD of each month's cast with a special commentary track from me. So with all that said, thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time with another great discussion. Take care.